you for being here today. I'm Shivani Malhotra, the Specialty Pharma and Generics Analyst at RBC Capital. And with me, I have Paul Wharton, the CEO of Antares, and
LaRue,
who's the VP of Sales and Marketing at Antares as well. So first, thank you very much for being here this morning. This is a company, obviously, that's very interesting to a lot of investors, and you are at a unique point in the development of the company in terms of your pipeline versus current cash flow. But just for those who are not familiar with Antares, could you take a few minutes just to talk through how Antares has kind of transformed over time and just where you see it going over the next year or so?
Sure. So, well, thank you very much for inviting us to this conference. And it's a great day for us to be presenting today. Last night, we received our NDA acceptance letter for Atrexup. So we hit a really big milestone for ourselves yesterday. And in actual fact, this is just another step in the transition of this company. So Antares is a company that has world-leading injectable technology platforms. And we are using those platforms to develop pharmaceutical products. And Atrexup was our first pipeline product that we are developing ourselves. And we have historically worked with companies like Teva. We have a good partnership with Teva, where we have five products either marketed or in development. A partnership with Pfizer, Ferring over in Europe, and Medipharma. And the partnership strategy has been very successful. It's taken us to this point. Going forward, we're going to forward integrate and focus on developing products in our injector technologies where there's a medical need for the product, where our injector technology really does make a difference to allow patients to give themselves the drug at a home setting, basically. And there's a lot of older drugs out there which could be more useful if they were re-engineered using the types of technology that we have developed. And so that's what we're doing. We're forward integrating. The other part of our strategy is to focus on drugs that can be taken out to a very sort of specialized segment. So in the case of Atrexup, for example, you only need 25 to 30 reps to target all of the rheumatologists that are responsible for most of the prescriptions in this area.
Okay. So currently, your business model is still royalty-driven, and you talked about partnerships with companies like Teva. So can you talk us through in more detail the partnerships with Teva and the products that you're working on, and also how we should think about the revenue breakdown over the next 3 to 5 years as you develop your own products?
Sure. We just to be clear, we generate revenues today, but we're not an earnings story just yet. So for us, the launch of Atrexup is really the lead into what we expect to be substantial revenue growth after 2014. So right now, the path we're on is to launch Atrexup within the next 12 months. Teva's been an important partner for us. We have mentioned a product on the market already, human growth hormone, needle-free. We have the generic version of the EpiPen, which is currently FDA. Sumatriptan, which we've also developed with Teva in the auto-injector platform, and two pen programs in development with Teva. And the partnership with Ferring over in Europe for HGH needle-free as well is also important. Part of the importance of those relationships is it helped us to learn about this complicated area of drug-device combination product development, which got us kick-started and enabled us to really move the Atrexup product through the pipeline pretty quickly. So just FYI, but Atrexup actually took 18 months start to finish on the development program. We're anticipating that testosterone is going to be doing the same. And we filed them as 505B2 NDAs. So we've got this branded product strategy using a technology platform that has very strong IP behind it to protect the product. And LaRue, who has joined us just about 9 months ago, is responsible for taking Atrexup out onto the market. And we'll ask him in a few minutes to talk about his vision for how we're going to market that product.
Let's ask him that right now. So first, can you talk about the market and why there is a need for the product, and then how you anticipate positioning it, especially given this is a pretty genericized market as well?
Sure. I think it's very important to understand the positioning. Let's start with the market. I think everybody's familiar with rheumatoid arthritis, and that's what I'll focus on. Arthritis Foundation, American College of Rheumatology, estimate 1.5 million people with rheumatoid arthritis in the U.S. Most of them are not diagnosed and treated. If you look at reports like Decision Resources, if you look at some epidemiology studies, etc., the estimates are anywhere from 400,000 to, say, 750,000 patients actually drug-treated in the U.S. for rheumatoid arthritis. It's a huge market. The biologics clearly have made a big impact. I personally launched Enbrel in the U.S. 1999, and I've been along with that ride and having fun ever since. And it's interesting for me now to sort of go back and revisit methotrexate, because it is still the cornerstone, the go-to, the gold standard DMARD that rheumatologists go to once they've diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis. So patients tend to be treated with DMARDs, methotrexate being the DMARD of choice, to a point where they have an inadequate response, sometimes referred to as a failure to respond, or that could be due to tolerability, side effects, could be lack of efficacy. But for whatever reason, the rheumatologist and the patient get to a point where the patient is not getting adequate response. They continue to have, you know, swollen and tender joints, pain, stiffness in the morning, etc. Now, you could treat them symptomatically with cortisone, etc., but that doesn't stop the disease from progressing. Excuse me. So what they do then is they move on to the biologics. They either switch to a biologic or they add a biologic. So what I'm trying to explain is most patients, more than 90% of them, will progress through a methotrexate treatment period and at that point either switch or add to a biologic. Now, where does Atrexup come in? It is an easy-to-use, convenient, subcutaneous self-administration. So what? That's just convenient. Yes, there's a need for a convenient self-administrable methotrexate, but there's two big opportunities. One is a clinical unmet need, and the one is financial. Well, let's start with a clinical unmet need. There are data from several published studies. First pivotal study was Braun out of Germany, which showed that because of the saturable limitations of methotrexate, the ability for the stomach to actually absorb more than 15 milligrams is jeopardized in most patients. So if you look at the pharmacokinetic studies, including the study that we had a press release on quite some time ago, the bioavailability of Otrexup, the subcutaneous methotrexate, gives you an almost dose-response linear increase in systemic availability. Whereas if you give oral methotrexate, once you get to about 15 milligrams, it plateaus off. So if you give 20 or 25, the body actually still only gets about 15 milligrams in the blood. So it doesn't really help you. However, with Otrexup, if you give 20, you get 20. If you give 25, you get 25. So there's an extended clinical utility, which continues to provide a satisfactory and a durable response to treatment. So the patients remain symptom-free, and studies have been published to show that when patients are symptom-free, their disease is not progressing. And so at that point, somewhere down the line, it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years for some patients, they would switch or add a biologic. So that's where the second opportunity comes in. It's the financial opportunity. It's billions of dollars that payers are putting out for biologics. So if you can extend the adequate response by 1 month, on average, a plan might save $1,000 for one patient for 1 month.
So can you explain that in a bit more detail, simply because, two questions. One, have you done studies to show the clinical benefit as the dose increases? And then do you think the FDA would require that for your product? And, you know, at what point does it peak? So that's one. And second, as you get more systemic absorption, are there any risks or side effects associated with that? And is that a concern, you think, for the agency?
Sure. I can respond to
that. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yep.
So the first question was, did we do any studies? We did do a pharmacokinetic study, and we've submitted that to EULAR for presentation in June. And this was also part of the filing to the FDA, and the NDA, as Paul said, was accepted this morning. So, indeed, the FDA are not asking us to do anything else. You know, what we've done is, it appears to be adequate. So, the pharmacokinetic and bioavailability data that we conducted clearly shows the increasing dose-responsive increase in systemic availability, meaning that the drug is bioavailable. And it also shows in the control arm that the oral methotrexate plateaus off at about 15 milligrams. So that's
the other piece of this is that there's a lot of clinical experience with parenteral methotrexate. A lot of data coming out of Europe with hundreds of patients in studies. And we're using that to support our application. But the thing to remember here is methotrexate is an already approved drug. And the challenge here was being able to convert an approved drug that's given by intramuscular injection, which usually requires a professional to administer it, converting it to an easy-to-administer subcutaneous route of administration, which can be given at home. So we switched the route. We'll be the first company to have a subcutaneous route of approval for methotrexate, and that's really the opportunity. And all the work we did in the clinical pharmacokinetic study showed that you got the increased absorption of methotrexate that was basically on a par with the intramuscular route administration.
Okay, and just before we move on to some of your other products, can you talk about the manufacturing side of the product? Because that sometimes comes up as an issue later on.
Yeah, we've got this one covered. So we manufacture the product to quite simply what we do is we manufacture a pre-built syringe containing the methotrexate drug solution. Whether a patient gets a 10 milligram dose or a 25 milligram dose, we formulate it such that they only receive 400 microliters of the injection, which is a very comfortable volume to inject. And then the pre-filled syringes are then put into two sub-assemblies, which are the auto-injector components, this part A and part B, and then you just snap that shut. The components for us are manufactured by a company up in Massachusetts that does a lot of this work for other drug companies, people like Lilly. And then we're packaging it, the final assembly and packaging is being done down at a facility in Pennsylvania that also works with large pharmaceutical companies. So we've got the supply chain already worked out.
Okay. So no CMC issues at the late?
No.
Okay, great. And you're expecting a 10-month review cycle? So.
Yeah, the PDUFA date is October the 14th of this year.
Okay. And is this a product you're looking to market on your own, or are you looking for a partner?
Well, we will be seeking partners, certainly for international opportunities. Right now, LaRue is building up a strategic group within Antares. We're working with Quintiles to provide the feet on the street initially for the product, and we've got a launch plan for Q1 of next year, so within 12 months, basically. He's very busy right now.
Very busy. Lou, what do you think the peak opportunity for a product like this could be?
Our estimates right now, based on interviews that we've conducted with rheumatologists and payers, would say, and we've not finalized pricing yet, but it's somewhere between $100 and $200 million.
Okay.
And that's just for rheumatoid arthritis. We haven't started sort of factoring in any additional sales that we might obtain from psoriasis, for example, which we believe will also get us an indication from the agency.
Can you just talk through where that is in terms of the filing or development?
Well, in actual fact, the development plan we use for rheumatoid arthritis will enable us to make that claim for psoriasis as well. So, right now, we're just going to be waiting for our approval in October.
So you're expecting a broader, like a broad label
basically,
rather than a...
Yes, it'll be the methotrexate label, the injection for methotrexate that's currently out there.
Okay.
For subcutaneous administration with an auto-injector.
Okay. Can we move on to the Vyvex platform and testosterone? Because that's another really interesting product. So again, can I ask you to describe the need, clinical need, and then how you... your product, as differentiated and fitting in with the market.
So I think the testosterone product is a really good example of how good marketing led us to developing our pipeline. So if you actually look at the market for testosterone replacement therapy today, it's about a $2 billion market. One third of the prescriptions are still given as an intramuscular injection. But the value of the injectable piece is less than the gel piece, for example. Coupled with that, you have an issue with the black box warning on the gels and the transference, and that's becoming quite an issue now out there in the environment. But what we were able to do was we developed a Vyvex technology to deliver highly viscous drugs, and testosterone is formulated as an oil. And when we were actually sort of developing this platform 4 years ago, we were looking to apply it to biologicals longer term. But we recognized, it was a little bit like methotrexate, we recognized that the prescriptions for injectable testosterone really started to ramp up. And what we realized was if we could do the same thing as methotrexate, convert a deep intramuscular shot to a subcutaneous shot that we give once a week, that we'd have a winning product on our hands. And we've interviewed physicians and patients. And without exception, they've all embraced the idea of a once-weekly subcutaneous shot of testosterone. Gives you better control of the blood levels. You're going to have less peak-to-trough variation. It only takes 5 seconds to give yourself the injection, so it's very discreet and easy to use. So the patient convenience is very, very high. And I think it's potentially a much larger product opportunity for Antares than the methotrexate. Certainly the feedback we're getting from individuals who we've interviewed on this is very, very positive.
What other products do you think? You said there's other kind of molecules or kind of products that you think are very amenable to this sort of technology.
Mm-hmm. So we've actually done quite a lot of background work in the past few years. We've identified more than 40 drugs that could be applicable to this type of technology. And it's worth mentioning here as well that we've been very active on the patent front for the past few years as well to make sure we protect our position going down the road on all of these ideas that we've had. But you can see them being used for where you want to convert an injectable to at-home use. Emergency use, for example, the EpiPen is a good example of how it can be used. You can also look at situations where you need to be able to dose something like methotrexate, which is a cytotoxic agent initially, given by intramuscular injection. And when you use our system, it's all self-contained. So in the case of safety, for example, there's a big advantage to be able to give a patient one of these devices and know that they can safely administer the drug. And then when it's finished, they just put it back together again and it can be disposed of or recycled. And so there's situations like emergency situations, institutional situations. There's lots of them that are available. The key thing for us, Siobhan, is to make sure that we develop ones that people want to buy. Quite plain and simple.
That would be quite important. And so, you know, my next question was going to be around IP. So can you just talk through the IP? Is it going to be on the injection or the injector, or is it going to be on the injector plus the product? I mean, how is that working, and do you have any patents listed for Oxitrep?
Yeah, so that's a good question. The history of this company is about 20 years old. We were one of the pioneers in needle-free delivery technology using spring-powered systems. And we applied that to auto-injector technology, which is like the Vibex device in the 90s. And I believe we were one of the first companies to actually get an auto-injector patent in 1999. So what we've done is we've protected the platform, and you can protect things like the speed of delivery out of the device, the strength of the spring, the pounds per square inch, the design of the device as well, all the way through to what we've done now, which we're in generation 2 of Vibex, which is called the QS system. We've adapted it for highly viscous materials. And then what we've done is we've applied that patent base to classes of drugs. In actual fact, we have a patent filing, which is called the hazardous agents filing, which we filed 4 years ago, which will protect the trends up. We've already got 4 patents that we can include in the Orange Book for Atrexa. And now we're building on that with data as it comes out of the clinical trials on the product-specific application of the device.
You mentioned EpiPen, and, you know, obviously that's something that people probably ask you a lot about. So my question here is, quite a few questions. So per your settlement with Mylan, mm-hmm. you can launch in 2015, but you need to get your own product approved.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about whether you expect the product to be approved as a substitutable product versus, you know, going through the 505b2 route? And then how you see the market developing over the next few years? And finally, you know, just would be interested in your perspective on the Sanofi product recently launched.
So as you know, we've got a date of June 2015 when the product will be launched. We are manufacturing devices right now for Teva. I think the market opportunity is significant. By the time 2015 comes along, this product will be a $1 billion product. So it's a high priority product for us as well as for to Teva to make sure we get this one right. Even Mylan have projected that the types of sales that we could be looking at are somewhere between 25 and 40% of the product by that time when we launch. So it's a very important product for us. It's a less important product for us in terms of revenue than it used to be because of the impact of Atrexup and now testosterone as well. So if you look at our pipeline, we've got Atrexup going to market next year.
Yep.
We have the generic EpiPen in 15, and then we have the testosterone product, which will go out in 2016. So we've got a build of revenues there, but the biggest opportunity we have in the near term is, in fact, methotrexate. So that's what we're focusing on. The Sanofi product you mentioned, it's interesting. I believe that the real opportunity for epinephrine injections lies in the substitutable product because the EpiPen is such a well-known brand that the substitutable angle of that can't be ignored. There's been other companies that have gone out there with branded versions of the EpiPen which haven't done very well. So it'd be interesting to see how that product succeeds.
So can I infer that you are going for an AB rating and not taking the 505B2?
Yes.
Okay. And then why do you believe, so there was a lot of talk maybe last year that you would be getting an approval near term or at least a tentative approval. Can you just talk about what you think the agency is kind of stuck
well,
on?
You'll have to ask Teva that question because I'm not privy to their regulatory dialogue. All I can say is that we've got a date in 2015 when we're expecting a launch, and Teva and ourselves are committing all the manufacturing expertise right now to manufacturing devices for that launch. So I think you can read between the lines.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. So, you know, just in terms of where the company is going over the next 2 to 5 years, you know, I ask because if I look at the technology you have, that's probably once it's validated, which it soon should be, it's very attractive to acquirers. And also every company Jack has worked for has been taken out. So I guess what is the end game for Antares? Do you see yourselves as, you know, a company that's going to kind of build, you know, itself into a spec pharma company and stay independent, or are you looking to, you know, be a platform kind of for someone else maybe?
Well, in actual fact, first of all, we're not for sale. But the reality is you're dead on. I mean, this platform, we have, I think, the best devices on the market. When you look at other people's devices, they're not as good as ours. But the applicability of that technology to drugs is quite large. And as a company, it would be difficult for us to develop 40 drugs in this device on our own. So we will be continuing to seek partnerships. We actually steered away from doing business development transactions on the devices for a couple of years because we wanted to make sure we could develop methotrexate and testosterone ourselves and focus all of our resources on that. We've turned this company around significantly in the past couple of years, and we've got the wherewithal now to make sure we can be successful with our internal pipeline. And of course, what happens is when you file an NDA with your own product, we've been inundated with business development inquiries since December when we filed that NDA on Atrexup. So I would anticipate we see more agreements with pharmaceutical companies coming down the road. But as LaRue and I both agree, our focus right now at the company is making sure we get the Atrexup done because that's the most important thing we've got on the horizon.
Okay. And given you're a specialty pharma company, and I'd say most investors we speak to, like Catalyst, and want to know why to hold a stock today versus, you know, closer to when you see an approval. Can you just talk us through, you know, the step up in valuation that you see and what you think people might be missing today?
Well, I think that the number one goal for us this year is to get the approval on Atrexup. We are expecting to see another filing out of the Teva pipeline coming along.
Can you tell us which one?
No. But we're expecting another filing there. We've got the approval for HGH 10 milligram, which we're anticipating, which we filed the SNDA on with Teva last fall, which should be in the next few months. I'm expecting we're going to get additional patents announced. These are granted patents. By the way, we don't discuss anything like patents we filed or even notices of allowance because it's all temp, you know, never quite sure where that's going to pan out. But specifically around the Atrexup product. So there's a lot of catalysts coming through, and testosterone will be finding the we'll be starting the clinical trials on that fairly soon. We anticipate finishing the first trial on that towards the end of the year. So we have data coming out at the end of the year on that.
Okay.
There's a lot going on.
Yep, clearly. Well, great. Thank you very much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Shivani.